Hello and welcome to iVow. I'm Jenny Prisk and delighted to be your host in this podcast conversation. And today we are very pleased to welcome to our interview Congresswoman Susan Davis, who is elected or has been elected for numerous years to the House of Representatives in the 53rd District of California. So welcome to our conversation, Congresswoman.
Thank you, Jenny. It's good to be with you. I always enjoy talking to you.
Oh, thank you so much. That's very kind. And I enjoy listening to you and all the legislation that you move forward. And I just wanted to share with our listeners a little bit of your background, because from 1983 to 1992, you were a member of the School Board of San Diego, serving during that time as president and vice president. And then in 1994, you were elected to the California State Assembly. So straight into politics, what was the driving force behind that? And who was your guide, or did you have mentors? Long question.
The simple answer to that really is, I think politics was probably the last place I ever expected to go. It wasn't something I thought about growing up as a kid. I knew I wanted to help people. I didn't actually feel there were a lot of avenues open to me as a young girl, actually. But I went to school to become a social worker. I have a master's degree. Yet I think that once I arrived in San Diego, I started getting involved with the League of Women Voters. Uh-huh. And it was really League that inspired me to get to know San Diego. I was on numerous committees of League and spent time with great women who wanted to really make a contribution to the community. Along the way, I got involved in a few political campaigns, but I didn't really think about that for myself. And in fact, I was helping a neighbor to apply, not just apply, but to run for the school board seat that I eventually sought. And I really thought she'd be terrific at it and wanted to give whatever help and support I could. And a few days before the filing deadline, she decided that that wasn't what she needed to do or wanted to do at that time. Mm-hmm. And I kind of jumped in because I then had kind of been preparing for her to do it and felt that, okay, I think I'm ready. I knew that I wanted to be very much present for my own kids that were in public school and that I could make a contribution. I don't know that I thought at the time that, oh, I'm a social worker. I know a lot about resources. Mm-hmm. So that was something. But I think it was just having had some exposure, mostly through League, to good policy and to the fact that I had participated in some campaigns. And it wasn't so scary to me.
So you get into the state assembly, and then now you've left the school board, I would imagine, at this point. What's it like when you first enter the assembly, and especially as a woman, if it's any different?
Yeah, well, the funny thing about the assembly was I was actually quite content in a job I had taken on towards the end of my time on the school board. A few years prior to leaving the board, and I picked up an extra year because they had changed the year that we actually ran, even and odd for school board. Mm-hmm. But I had been working as the executive director of the Aaron Price Fellows Program, which was a program that the Price family started in honor of Aaron, who had died of a brain tumor. Mm. It was a very kind of bittersweet endeavor to honor Aaron, but to do something quite amazing and fabulous for young people. And so I was so privileged to have a chance to be part of that. I really expected that I would continue to do that job for a long time. I loved it. It was working with kids. It was working with their parents. It was exploring public policy in San Diego. I mean, there was nothing better, really. And then I got a call from some people at the state level, including Lucy Calais and others. Yes. And they basically said, we know that you're really love your job. And I had told them how, you know, really how this was the perfect job for me. But please come up to Sacramento. We want to talk to you and we want to show you what the options might be for you to use whatever skill sets you have, really, and as a woman. So a large group of the group of women that were available there, including Dee Dee Alford and others, just helped me to see that, okay, maybe I could make a contribution here in education and healthcare and numerous other areas. And so I decided to run. It happened to be an open seat, although certainly my opponent in that race was very dedicated to winning, as was I. And so I ran that year in 94, which happened to have been a difficult year, actually, for Democrats, if you recall that at the national level, it wasn't a good year. I ran then, and then as I was finishing my third term in the state legislature and we had term limits, I probably would have stayed if we didn't have term limits, actually, or even been interested in the state Senate seat. But Dee Dee Alford was in that seat, and I loved Dee Dee, and we were good friends, and I certainly wasn't going to take that on. I looked again at the congressional race as people were urging me to do that. It was a tough race because I knew I would run against someone who was popular. I decided, okay, again, I want to take what I know, what I feel comfortable with, and my passion about healthcare and education, not thinking as much about armed services at that time,
right,
and take that to the national level. I had been a military spouse. I had really been exposed, I think, to a world of women here in San Diego, where we had a lot of women in public office, and I felt confident that if I worked really, really hard and got a great team to help me, that perhaps we would be fortunate enough to be successful.
And you were in 2000, correct?
So I was elected in 2000.
I can hear your passion when you talk about the serving and the helping, and especially in those areas that are very close to your heart. How easy is it to get that legislation written, to get those bills in front of the right people? I was reading a list of your bills before I came in to talk with you today, and the list is very long. What's that process like?
Well, it's very different at the state level than it is at the federal level, because at the state level, you really have an opportunity to have your bills heard, and not so necessarily at the national level. On committees, we work together to pass in the armed services and education authorizing bills, and that some of our ideas and the legislation that we've worked in may be incorporated in those bills. So you don't really have your name on a lot of the ideas that actually happen at the national level. And maybe for some reason you're not the primary author of that, but you're working as hard as co-sponsors and co-authors of those bills. At the state level, I supported then access for women to OBGYN. There was a time when you had to go to a primary care provider as a woman and basically get a letter allowing you to go on and see an OBGYN. That didn't make any sense to me whatsoever. And so I had to convince a lot of men to be open to this discussion. And what I basically said to them was, go home and talk to your wives.
Oh, what a smart thing to do. And did that help them to become easy to
do this? Yes, absolutely. Good. There was an aide to then Governor Wilson.
That would be Pete Wilson, the governor of California.
Pete Wilson, who had sort of put me off a little bit. And I said, please, talk to your wife about this.
Talk to Gail.
Not just to Gail, but to this aide's wife. And so it was partly through that discussion that we started broadening. And then I remember that the senator, who was the majority leader at that time, basically said to me when I was over on the Senate floor, well, you know, I don't think we really need that, because if we give women the ability to do this, they're just going to keep going to OBGYNs. And I looked at him and I said, really? Do you think we really like doing that? And he kind of looked at me and said, well, maybe not. You know, maybe I really had it wrong.
They really don't know, do they, how that
said,
can be at an OBGYN?
You don't get that, do you? But you should.
Yes.
And we're going to help you understand that, because I think that it's needed certainly not a partisan issue. And it's not even a gender issue, because once men, I think, understand that, of course they feel that it's important
things change
for women to go directly and to have that kind of access. And that really changed the law in California. We then went on at the national level to change it. It became part of the Affordable Care Act,
exactly. And so you were blazing the way, the trail and the way for women at that point, and you've continued to do so greatly. But I want to ask you from your perspective, are you as a woman treated any differently from your male counterparts in the House of Representatives?
Well, I'll tell you a funny story that I share.
Oh, good. I was hoping you would have some.
Well, when I was first elected, I was in a orientation room, and my husband happened to have gone along with me to the room, and we were sitting and working in there and getting some, you know, basic information about how to run an office. And we left the room, and a gentleman came running up to us who happened to be a reporter, and he looked right at my husband and he said, "Sir, are you a new member of Congress?" And my husband looked at him and he said, "No." And the guy just didn't even bother to glance at me and said, "Oh, I'm so sorry, sir," and walked away.
Oh, my goodness.
So that was my first indication.
Yes, yes.
That maybe people do think quite differently about women in Congress, because I had thought, well, we had gotten over that. You know, there were enough women, I thought, that people wouldn't even think about it like that. Mm-hmm. But I know that that's not true. And yet, on the other hand, I do think that sometimes we have some advantages as well. Mm-hmm. What I think is critical, no matter where women are, it's having what I would call a critical mass. Mm-hmm. So one other woman on a committee isn't as helpful as having three or four or even five. Mm-hmm. And if you think about a boardroom, mm-hmm. and you think about what's really needed, it's to, number one, give people, I think women particularly, what I would call rehearsal time sometimes to sort of try out ideas in a safe setting, but also to have someone to back them up. And I love it when I hear women who have the same story that I do, when they said something, you know, around the table and nobody said anything until, you know, the guy two people down maybe brings it up, doesn't acknowledge that he got that idea or heard it again from someone who is there. And I think when there's this critical mass, women can be supportive of one another. They can be competitive at times too.
Oh,
they
yes.
should be. They absolutely should be. But it really does make a difference when there are more women around the table. And we often say, you know, if you're not at the table, you know, you're on the menu.
Yes.
And so, you know, if you're not really there working on the agenda, and I do think that that makes a difference. And in Congress now, 20%, almost 20%, 19% in the House, 20% in the Senate, it's nearing some kind of critical mass. I don't think that we're there, frankly, until we're half.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
We're half of the population. We should be at least half.
Yes.
And there certainly are parliamentary groupings in countries where women are more than half.
Absolutely.
And they're getting things done.
Yes,
so
they are.
We have a way, I think, of being socialized that often brings people to try and really solve the problems. Maybe it's a little bit less ego. Not sure what that is. But whatever it is, it's wanting to find the common ground as quickly as possible and sharing that through some of our experiences. Mm-hmm.
And women are good at talking things through. Now, you've just been prompting in my mind the fact that Elizabeth Warren has been joining Hillary Clinton, I almost said President Hillary Clinton, on her stump speeches at the moment. And I'm thinking, is that kind of support that you're talking about? Do you think that will strengthen Hillary's case in this? It has been such a vicious election year.
Well, the most diversity that she can bring to the table, I think, is great. Mm-hmm. And certainly having prominent women do that. Women who maybe she doesn't always share the same approach to.
Right.
Probably agree on everything, but maybe there's an approach that's different.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true, I think, of many of the people that we work through with. I don't think I would say that all of us, women don't think alike necessarily. No one should think that we all think the same. But I think you have shared experiences, and even though the perspective is a little different, I believe diversity in all ways is important. Mm-hmm. I feel so strongly about that. When I had this opportunity to lead the Aaron Price program, I was very specific about wanting to bring in a cadre of what we called facilitators then, mm-hmm. who really were like the students that were part of the program,
yes.
who came from different backgrounds, who were people of color, who mm-hmm. had very different experiences perhaps, but that they could all identify with. And no matter what background you have, just being in environments where you have these people makes a difference. Mm-hmm. And so I think that diversity is important, and it's important for national security mm-hmm. that we have men and women mm-hmm. in our armed services.
Yes.
I heard the Secretary of the Navy the other day say it makes us less predictable. We have all these different perspectives. Mm-hmm. And to innovate, to be productive, to be exciting in the mm-hmm. way we go about things, that's why women are critical in this, not just because they're a different gender. They have different experiences.
Yeah, yes.
And so all women of color, all women of different backgrounds have so much to offer at the table. And mm-hmm. I think that we're starting to see much more of that.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to find a day when people don't think, you know, or look at it. Even when you walk into houses of worship, if you saw the people who headed up most of those houses of worship over the years, mm-hmm. no matter what religion, there are pictures often of men.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a few women spattered among them. And that's important. It's important in everything that we do. Mm-hmm. And I just feel strongly that we all do better by that.
Yes.
And that's why we have to promote people and women particularly,
yes.
in all levels and certainly in the highest level of office of our country.
Absolutely. I have a favorite saying that says one of us is never as good as the sum of us. And I think that's what you're explaining. You're also well known for crossing the aisle. President Obama has had, I think, a hard row to hoe with crossing the aisle or having the aisle perhaps come to him. Do you think that's going to change in the future because perhaps even of what is going on in this election year?
I think that we have an opportunity to have someone come into this office, and clearly Secretary Clinton has many of the attributes, I think, to do mm-hmm. that, mm-hmm. having been in the Senate, having really worked in that environment with people who didn't agree with her, but that she was able to bring in just by virtue of the way she approaches issues, I think, mm-hmm. and trying to see the broader picture. I know she did that as a member of the armed services. I know that firsthand.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was a surprise to people. So I'm really counting on the fact that she will be very persistent in that. Now, I think it's going to be hard. I think it's going to be tough, as mm-hmm. it was for President Obama,
mm-hmm.
To have people be more open and to try and figure out, negotiate, and come together to solve those problems. But I think she has been in that situation so many times. Mm-hmm. And that gives her a bit of a leg up. And
mm-hmm.
I think where people think there's not much difference right now, I think there's a tremendous difference in that kind of experience. So mm-hmm. I'm counting on that
mm-hmm.
Making a difference. And I think we all have an opportunity and really an obligation to our colleagues, no matter what experiences we've had. We've all had positive experiences across the aisle. Mm-hmm. I've traveled with women. I created this bipartisan trip mm-hmm. to Afghanistan.
To Afghanistan. Mm-hmm.
And that has brought together a lot of women who ordinarily wouldn't come together, but we can be at one another's homes and really have a sense of commonality mm-hmm. as a result of that trip.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm looking forward to being able to hopefully bring in folks who I've worked with on committees and subcommittees that I think we'll have an open mind. And, you know, at least for a while, I think. And my gosh, we all have to have an open mind these days because mm-hmm. our constituents are counting on us.
Yes.
We have to be able to translate this experience for our constituents every single day, to be the resource for them, and to really be present
mm-hmm.
at those opportunities that we have to create an environment where people want to make the right decisions, not because it's fashionable or it's partisan, but because they really believe deep down that it's right for the country.
Yes, yes.
And that's what I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to be part of that.
Well, now I'm pleased to hear you say I'm looking forward to that, because we know that you have been a member of the House of Representatives, Congress, since 2000, and now it's 2016. So there's no retirement on your horizon.
I'm looking forward to the next 2 years specifically. And there are some interests that I have in trying to work particularly to national service for our country. We're not going to get there in 2 years, but I think to begin to delve further into how we do it, how we build the foundation and the pieces to make sure that every young person in this country has a chance to give back early in their lives so that the rest of their lives they're focusing and on a path, a career path, if you will, an educational path, a community path that helps them to really do and be the very best person that they always want to be. And we can do that for all of the people in our district as well as our country, then that would be a wonderful thing.
Well, that is, yes, and that's a great statement to make, because it embraces everyone. What do you say to young women or even older women who are considering a career in politics? Do you have special advice for them?
Well, I think that no matter what it is that they're doing, I often would say, and this isn't from my own experience so much, but being around a little bit longer, is that do the best you can in whatever it is that you do. And work with the people, build relationships, learn something about how you react to people and how they react to you. Mm-hmm. What is it that you do to persuade them to be the best they can be as well? How do you encourage that? How do you really aspire to something that people might look at you and say, wow, you know, you could do this or you could do that? It may be in politics, it may be in something else, but whatever it is that you're doing, do the best that you absolutely can. And then, you know, one day you turn around, you don't maybe think you're leading, but you'll turn around and you'll see that there are a lot of people who are just so impressed by the work that you do. And I think if women and young men do that, and rather than thinking at the beginning, I'm going to be president of the United States, that's wonderful to think about that, but that might mean that they do some things that wouldn't necessarily bring them along as much as just focusing on doing the best at the time that they're doing it. And I think a lot of things come your way. And taking risks, I think taking risks, running for office at any level, whether it's even in elementary school, is taking a risk. So get out there, take a risk. You know, I felt that students who became part of our program as part of the Aaron Prize at the beginning especially, but even later on, they had to take a risk. People might not like them. They might not like the program. This might not work for them. Whatever it is, and then later on, as you're going on and thinking about your future, take risks, good risks, and do the best you can, and you'd just be surprised how far you can go.
And I can see the way that you get fired up and become passionate about what you have can look back on and also look forward to your in your past achievements and your future achievements. I am so very sorry that we have to conclude this interview because I could go into so many different areas with you, but I do want you to have the last word. So is there anything that you would like to share with us more about Susan Davis, the woman, or more about Congresswoman Susan Davis, the representative, in your closing remarks in our interview?
Well, one of the things I would say, and I don't know that I've been totally successful in this, but I have tried to be myself in this role. That has been so important to me. And I actually think I have colleagues who do the same, who have the same goal, but not to be doing things because I'm a member of Congress. I love it when I run into old friends who say, "You haven't changed at all." And I think, I hope I've changed some. I hope I'm more knowledgeable. I hope I've gained, you know, better skills and I'm more comfortable speaking publicly. But at the same time, that just down you know, it's your core, that I care about people genuinely and that I really hope to be part of something that helps them feel like they're doing better as well. And I think that we all know it takes a village, and I'm so happy to be in a community like San Diego where we do support one another, and particularly the women of our city, I think, have helped move women along to be in all kinds of places that they're doing a great job in. And they're really setting a course so that young women who come after them will know that there are great role models out there. I've had them, and it means a lot to me to feel that maybe there are some young women who feel that I've been a good role model.
Oh, I would sure that that is what the majority of people who come into your company would say, because that's how I've viewed you over the years that I've known you and observed you. And it has been such a pleasure to hear more about the woman, Susan Davis, together with the Congresswoman, Susan Davis, in this interview today. We thank you for your time and thank you for joining us on this iVow podcast.
Thank you.